Now, back to Open House with Team Reba.
Welcome back to Open House with Team Reba. I'm Reba Haas with Team Reba, RE/MAX Metro Eastside.
And here, Eric Osnes with Home Street Bank.
And here, Eric Osnes.
Here I am.
Oh, what a here very interesting intro. And there he is. Oh, my gosh. Well, we're back with Tamara Simon from Cost Property Management. And, of course, during the break, there was a whole lot of additional conversation going on about all these very Seattle-centric situations, with landlord-tenant law and issues around protected classes. So I tell people all the time that Seattle is kind of its own animal. And so I know there's more than just protected classes that are things that stand out against maybe some of the other municipalities around here. Can you touch on some of those? Because I know like rent control is a big topic right now.
Sure. That's the million-dollar question. And I also would like our listeners to understand that the reason it's important to see what's going on in Seattle is because then it tends to migrate to mm-hmm. other areas.
Right.
So if you're in Burien or you're in Eastern Washington and you think, oh, it's just crazy, Seattle won't affect me, usually that's not how it works. So let's talk about rent control. There is a lot of emphasis on this in the Seattle area these days, mm-hmm. and it's because, of course, people feel priced out of the market.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rents are going up. You know, we want to be a world-class city. We're blessed with jobs. The key mm-hmm. is jobs.
Right.
Amazon has brought tons of jobs as well as other people, mm-hmm. and so it's a business of supply and demand, and right now we have very little supply mm-hmm. for sale or for rent and tons of demand. That makes price increases, right? And so rent control, while the Seattle City Council seems to be very much in favor of it, the truth of the matter is it would have to change at the state level. The Seattle City Council does not have the authority to produce rent control. In our state, it has to come from Olympia. That's number one. However, the Seattle City Council is doing things to make it more attractive for tenants and a little more challenging for landlords. Let's mm-hmm. start with giving notice. If you're on a lease, the lease has to be honored. But if you're on a month-to-month rental agreement, it used to be a 60-day notice if the landlord was going to move in, if the landlord was going to put his property on the market for sale. So right now, one of the biggest things is that has changed to a 90-day notice. That makes a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly keep in mind that two-thirds of the inventory here is single-family homes.
Right.
And a lot of landlords, that's the home that they're hoping to go back to. Maybe they rented it out because they took a job somewhere else. But something's happened, and they need to get back into the house. So that has changed. Another interesting thing is the rental registration ordinance.
Right.
This is new in the city of Seattle. Every landlord must register their property, and there's a $175 fee for a single-family home, and then it's a couple dollars for each additional property. This also gives the city of Seattle the authority to inspect your property to make any repairs that they think you need to make. On the surface, this sounds great. Of course, tenants sometimes feel they don't want to talk to their current landlord and say, this needs to be fixed.
Right.
On the other hand, if you want to have affordable housing, the more cities and states put cost on it, the more the price of rental housing goes up.
That's right.
Right. And as you know, my husband is a home inspector, and he's one of the people who is certified as a non-city employee to do those inspections. And he's been doing quite a few of them. You know, he's been working with a couple of very large building owners and their property management companies. And it's always kind of interesting to me to see the checklist, because some of them are as simple as, oh, the toilet's not bolted down properly. It's like, is that really a question of habitability, or like, where did that come from? So part of what they're checking out, you know, they say it's supposed to make sure that we have good habitable places, but I mean, it's as limited as long as one cooktop, you know, element is working on the stove. Like, you don't even have to have a full working stove. It's like just at least one element, just so you can at least warm up food. And so it's an odd policy that is in place.
From the landlord's perspective, There are plenty of rules and regulations already set in place under landlord-tenant law to make it clear what's habitable. There are plenty of agencies for a tenant to bring a grievance if they have it. They feel their landlord's not doing the correct thing. However, this is past. We have to live with it right now.
Right.
And so the goal, again, from the city is to visit every rental property within the next 10-year period.
Right.
And we'll see if that helps create more affordable housing. I have my doubts about that. But having said that, there are some landlords who need more encouragement to keep their properties
up.
What
a politically correct way to say that. I love that.
Thank you. I practiced that.
Yes, yes. Just real quickly, I want to make sure, because you brought this up on the break. Anyone listening to this, none of what we're talking about is direct legal advice for anybody.
Correct. Okay. I am not an attorney. I am just a designated broker who's licensed and a property manager with almost 3 decades of experience.
Yeah. Smart chick.
So the advice that you're getting, the value of it is equal to exactly what you're paying for it.
Well,
I feel it's worth more than that.
Now I'm saying over the air.
Yeah, we understand that. Although back to your point of don't think that if you own property elsewhere that something in Seattle won't affect you, because I was also surprised to find out Tukwila has a similar requirement for having rentals checked out also and inspected. And I know City of Tacoma's looked at it. City of Everett's been looking at it. So this is not something that's just sitting on its own.
That's correct. And I think it's also to understand the average landlord, the people that I've worked with for over 30 years, the people at the Rental Housing Association, they're not looking for this to be an adversarial relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like
any
business, you have something to offer. And you want your customers to be happy. And quite frankly, the longer a tenant stays at a property, usually the better it is for our bottom line as landlords.
Of course, right. And you know, that's actually a question I had for you. Is there a particular type of property that works best for, a new landlord to purchase? You know, I've had experience with, you know, one-bedroom, two-bedroom units, and those ones tend to turn fairly fast, you know, because you're not attracting a family, you know, to stay in that. I don't know if I can even say that anymore.
I can't answer it that way because now that's discrimination.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, but just from a realistic standpoint, you know, one of the interesting things is that if my office is in the University District, so someone who might buy a property in the U District is expecting to fill up that property, whether it's a single-family house or two-bedroom apartment, with 4 or 5 or 6 students, because that's going to be their biggest cash flow. I like to say, however, they're not really hiring me to be a property manager. They're hiring me to be a dorm director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a babysitter job.
Well, and there's a financing issue that goes along with that, too, because lenders won't like that.
Right, you're generally going to have co-signers. You're going to have more turnover. You're going to have more whatever, because generally when somebody's in college or a student, their lifestyle is going to be different, and the house or the property is not their number one priority to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Whatever do you mean by that?
Gosh.
I can't
imagine. Again, so eloquently spoken.
So you have to decide as a landlord to begin with.
Where's that Animal House theme music you were playing last from last week?
What is it you're going after? What are you comfortable with?
Right.
For example, it's all about risk and reward, like any investment.
Right.
And so some people are willing to take way more risk, meaning they're looking to fill up the house with more unrelated adults, students or not. Or they're going into a neighborhood that perhaps has a higher crime rate and some other issues, and they feel like, oh, this neighborhood will generate more income down the road, and I can buy the property for less. Some people who are really looking for a stable tenant may be looking more to suburban area, because people who move to the suburbs perhaps may be looking at a school district. That's the top priority.
Sure.
Just like when people go to buy a property for themselves to live in, you need to know what your priorities are. Now, does that mean that if you bought a house in the suburbs in the best school district, you're automatically going to get a family with children? No.
No,
of course not.
And, of course, you can't discriminate. What's even more interesting is to know your market. Seattle, for example, has less school-age children than anywhere else in the United States.
Right.
Yep.
Half the parents here send their kids to private school, mm-hmm. and we have more pet owners than almost anywhere
yes,
in the United States.
More dogs and cats.
I believe we lead the nation in cat owners. So
we do.
So
Portland. Portland beats us out.
So perhaps yeah. we're number two. So to say as a landlord, I don't want any pets, just keep in mind you're turning away a big percentage of the market
exactly.
and what that means. That's why it's important to do your homework.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. Pets are one. When I talk with clients who are buying rental properties, we do discuss some of these things of how lenient will you be? How will you handle pet policies if you're going to allow them? Because a lot of them will be like, oh, no, I won't do that. I said, well, you know what? I was a great tenant back when I was in that position of my life, but I always had animals. And so it was really difficult. I tell a lot of folks when they're moving here, in fact, that's one of the things, short-term rentals are really hard to get for folks moving here who want to live in a place for like 6 months or less and then find a home. And so they struggle because, you know, maybe they have the pets and they can't find someone who'll do short term, or they won't do pets or what have you. And so when I have a client who wants to buy these, I'm like, well, you have either opportunities to make more money, but you'll have more turnover. Because I know, like for myself, I'm open to the idea of short term rentals and knowing I'll have more turnover just because I know I can charge more. And frequently some of those tenants end up coming in and staying much longer than anticipated, mm-hmm. right? So, because people hate moving. So they kind of get in and they get in place for a while. And then maybe eventually they work their way out of it. But, you know, for me, it's like, okay, well, I can charge this for the pet and I add a pet monthly fee on. And, you know, it's this much if you do your lease for this period of time. And, oh, well, gosh, if you're not willing to go ahead and sign another one, then we'll just continue at that same level of rent. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can kind of play with the numbers to make it work out for you. But it does come with some element of risk. I do know when I bring the pets in, there might be some chewing, there might be some digging, there might be some urine issues, you know, and that has its own costs associated. The ones I have the biggest problem with is my other properties where someone else is managing it for me and I have a no pet policy, but those dang pets keep showing up and ruining my carpets. And we don't have there's no deposit in place and then I'm stuck, right? That's some of the risk I end up running into.
A good property manager should be able to deal with those things. And quite frankly, that's why a lot of people hire property managers, mm-hmm. is they don't have the time or the inclination or they don't want to deal with these issues. But things happen. This is life. And then a competent property management can deal with that issue, the pets, and it's not a service animal, about, all right, we'll go back to square one on this.
Right, and,
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've noticed that with my rentals. If they have pets, they're always the nicest ones, and they, you know. But even good pets have bad days.
Yes, they do.
Well, join us. We have more with Tamara Simon with Cost Property Management on KKOL Business Radio 1300. Stay tuned.
Open House has open phone lines. Give us a call at 866-712-1300.